This is the first post-interview of the Sports Medicine Broadcast here at SPATS. This is Bubba Wilson, and I will let our first speaker introduce himself and tell us a little bit about himself.
Thanks. Matt Kutz. I'm an associate professor at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, where it's about 30 degrees cooler than it is here in South Florida. That's true. No water views. Lake Erie, which is like we're looking at a big mud puddle. But anyways, I'm at Bowling State University. I talked this morning about the multi-sport dilemma relative to overtraining syndrome.
All right. So I was in on your talk, it was a very good talk, by the way. Excellent points. As athletic trainers, we deal with the Little League parent every day, all day. All right. And I'll tell my personal story first before I get into it. I have a daughter that's 19, just finished her freshman year of college. She's a musician, singer, songwriter, guitar player, has two albums out, and just dropped a single on iTunes and the other Wednesday. I'm not telling you to go buy it, but if you would, it'd help. So what we did with her, because we live this life of the Little League parent, that overbearing helicopter parent, all I told her was, look, that's your thing. That's your sport, okay? So what I don't like is, hey, can Matt come out and play? No, he's watching his hitting videos from his last three games. He can't do it. Well, he's eight, right? You know? So what we told her was, look, here's the deal. You handle this however you want, but when you go to a guitar lesson or a voice lesson and that instructor tells you that you did not practice, then you pay us the money back for that lesson. Right. That was my only rule. Right. I didn't tell her she had to practice X number of hours a day or a week, write X number of songs. Just if you're told you didn't practice, you pay me the money back. Right. So in all the years she did that, she had to do it twice. So she didn't burn out. Right. You know, she's not sick of guitar and sick of writing songs and sick of singing, because you got to have 3 gigs a month for, you know, until you're this age, and then it goes to 4. I think that's wrong. But we've been that way with sports for years. And what I tell people all the time, I've yet to see an 8 to 12 to 16 year old even sign a letter of intent or a pro contract.
Right.
So what are we doing?
That's great advice. That's a great story, because that summarizes, even though you're talking about music, it summarizes the multi-sport or season dilemma that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think the thing that is preeminent above any other thing that we want to tell these kids is have fun. You know, they need to be having fun. If they are not having fun, somebody somewhere is doing something wrong. Now, that somebody is a combination of parents, coaches, and the athlete. But you're absolutely right. They need to be in my mind. You know, reading what I've read, I have a very similar experience. I have two multi-sport season athletes in my house, teenage boys, and you can imagine. And it's crazy. The community that we live in, all of our the football team and baseball team in particular, which are the two sports my kids play, are, you know, competing for state titles every year.
Mm-hmm.
For the last 8 of the last 10 years. There is an expectation for them to live, eat, and breathe
Right. These
sports. And they don't, just coming here to this conference this week to do this took an act of God.
Yeah, you're paying people to take kids.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to bring my kids with me.
Right. But they can't be gone that long.
Oh, but 2 weeks. You're going to be gone 2 weeks. He's going to miss 18 at-bats. I mean, coaches had it broke down. He's going to miss this many innings, this many at-bats, 3 football lifting. No, he can't.
What?
What do you mean he can't? Don't tell me. You're talking to the wrong guy. I'm coming here to talk about overtraining.
Right.
At any rate, so that's the kind of thing we're dealing with. And even with my son, both of them, you know, it's a have fun issue. And as long – I think that is – if you're looking for a litmus test, I think that's one of the litmus tests we need to make sure that we're talking to our athletes about. This is making sure you're at least having fun. When it starts becoming work and no fun at 13 years old, 8 years old, something is amiss here.
Well, there's a reason they quit playing at 16, 17, 18 years old, or they get into that first year of college and I didn't like the coach. Well, no, it's because you played so much club soccer to use one that you didn't want to get out of bed to go get your ankle taken care of, or you were missing practices because now you actually had to do it when you were doing it way too much beforehand.
You're absolutely right. The other big contributing factor to the athlete quitting is we have created periodization in sports seasons where we don't allow for an off season anymore.
Right.
And we have the accumulation of the overlap of the ending of one season is the beginning of another season. And if you're in a situation where you're competitive, then the ending of that season is tournaments.
Right.
High-stakes tournaments.
Right.
So this is not tapering. You know, like right. like traditionally you would see, they're peaking in these high stake tournaments at the very end, of, and then ramping in another one. This one ends, this one goes, then the next one, the third one starts, until they're in a constant state of high elevated competition phase that's only meant to be a few weeks long. I mean, when Tudor Bompa and all these guys back in the 70s started talking about periodization the way that it's taught in the textbooks, we're only meant to have these high intense competitive seasons for several weeks at right. a time, and that's it. But they're going for 8 or 9 months at a time.
Right.
And the human body, especially an adolescent, can't handle that level of stress.
Right. Well, and you didn't mention it in your talk because it wasn't specific to baseball per se, but if you take, everybody knows Dr. Andrews.
Yeah.
So if you take what Dr. Andrews has said, if you play 8 months or more a year, you're a year-round athlete mm-hmm. by definition.
Yep.
You're 6 times more likely to have an injury requiring surgery.
Absolutely.
So let's take that a little further. And if you're a baseball pitcher, this is the best example I can give, and you're not in the major leagues, and they put a scope in your throwing shoulder, and they don't even have to do anything. Just put it in there, drive it around, take a peek. You have a 0% chance of making it to the big leagues as a pitcher.
Yeah.
Okay? If you look at that, and then you look at Major League Baseball spending 25% of the salaries for pitchers for them to be on the DL.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got some issues.
Yeah.
And
return
so,
on investment's a huge thing. Parents got to look at that. You know, I want them to throw more, do this, but like you said, that stress is going to likely end up in some sort of surgery, disqualifies them.
Well, and you talk about they want their return on investment. So we're going to spend $10,000 a year to play on a tournament. But let's just use baseball. I love baseball. I'm not harping on them.
Right.
It's summer right now. It's the easiest one to talk about. We could use soccer, use swimming, doesn't matter. But we're going to spend $10,000 a year to play select baseball, to go to Alabama in July to play week-long tournaments so we can win a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to play in the fall, in the winter, in the spring again. Okay, that becomes our family vacation
yep.
to go do that. They do that for 10 years, and the kid burns out.
Right.
Well, they could have invested that money and sent him to Harvard.
Absolutely.
For, you know, paying cash for everything and not flinch.
Bubba, you are preaching my message more than anything.
We'll stand
else.
On the soapbox together.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's a big soapbox.
It is. It's a big soapbox. And, yeah. They need advocates like us, you know. And I said in my talk, you know, athletic trainers, I believe, are the best position to make this statement.
Right.
You know, because we've got the academic expertise, the clinical expertise. I mean, we're good at what we do. And sometimes the coaches get myopic, the parents get myopic.
Sure.
I mean, I talk to parents. I mean, this is a real true story that just happened a few weeks ago. You're talking now, this is like a 12-year-old boy whose parents intentionally put them on two separate travel teams so he could get more pitches, because each team has a pitch count.
Right.
You know, so, well, we're going to loophole around that.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost to the parents, the cost to the athlete well, I'm going to put him on two because on one he's allowed to throw this many pitches a week, on another, so he gets an extra day of pitching. They're totally undoing the whole reason behind that and realizing when that kid's 16, 17 years old, he's going to be done.
Right. You left two components out of that. They're also taking pitching lessons.
Exactly.
And then dad wants to make sure he's getting his money worth, so he's got to throw with the kid
That's
as
right.
well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
You know, so yeah.
You're absolutely right.
So we talk a little bit about what overtraining is,
okay.
and then just quickly, because we don't want to duplicate your entire talk. We
right.
want to get on some other stuff. Talk a little bit about those red flags.
Yeah. So overtraining syndrome is basically the staleness or burnout that an athlete would feel after a long training cycle, a long training period. It's an accumulative disorder. It's accumulation of stress and trauma. Now, the stress and trauma are threefold. We typically only look at the metabolic or the physiological stress. Well, they only worked out 2 hours today or whatever it was.
Right.
But that's just one piece of it. The second piece is the environmental stress. Most of this high-intensity development around the country happens in July or August when it's the hottest. You know, and in places like this in South Texas, it's always hot, you know.
Right.
So you're not, you know, the environment, altitude is another issue. So the environmental stress is something that young bodies in particular, and we're talking junior high school ages, early high school ages, you know, they cope differently with.
Right.
They regulate heat differently. We think they're little adults, and they're just not. But so anyways, the metabolic physiological stress of the actual training itself, the environmental stress, and then the number one, the biggest aspect of all the stressors that throw any athlete into overtraining syndrome is the emotional non-sport related stress. That would be things like financial stress, exams, relational issues, these other things, you know, the neighborhood, the cyberbullying on Facebook, right. You know, these kinds of things. Those are the biggest aspects that cumulatively cause an athlete to experience.
You need to play on two teams and have this 6 hours a day, but by God, you need to have a 4.0 too.
Exactly.
You can't win for losing.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And that kind of creates in the athlete just an elevated stress level all the time, which leads to then the overtraining is insomnia. They can't sleep. They don't recover. They don't know how to relax. Like my son, when his idea of relaxing is sitting down with YouTube videos, watching hitting instruction.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, or catch how to, you know, he wants to watch, he always consume with this. Like, son, no, you're not doing that. You know, and knowing that what I know, you know, we try to really be intentional, but it's a hard fight. Now I'm arguing with my son about this.
Right. But the one thing I do like about though is that is self-directed by him and not from an outside
force. He's
still
liking it. And that's the key. I said, you got to have fun. That's a sign to me that he's still liking it.
Right.
But you're right. Those kinds of things are.
He's not looking at videos of how the best to burn my gear.
Exactly.
So, you know,
right.
So, yeah.
Right. But anyway, so overtraining. So signs and symptoms of overtraining syndrome include like insomnia, restlessness, that sense of lethargy you just can't wake yourself up out of.
Right.
That it's not fun anymore. And then those are signs and symptoms. But the actual diagnosis of it can only be made. What's interesting about overtraining syndrome, it's called a diagnosis of exclusion, which means you have to rule out everything else first.
And this is the only thing that's left. Yeah.
So, which means you can't really predict it coming. You only can diagnose it once it's too late.
Right.
So the issue there is a decrease in performance. So the checkbox that every physician would be looking for is this overtraining syndrome or not, would be, has performance decreased and has it stayed decreased? And the staying decreased means 21 days or more. So have they plateaued out? Have they started decreasing in performance? Have they taken time off and it still hasn't recovered?
Right.
Then you're an overtraining syndrome.
Right. Well, and you know, it's funny if you think about it, and I thought about it kind of that moment, you know, when you said it in there, but we've known for years about the female athlete triad.
Right, yeah.
But we don't put two and two together to say, oh, hell, this is the male athlete triad in essence, too, with a few exceptions. Yeah. That's overtraining. We knew it for the females.
Right.
You know, and I get it. The you know, smart coach is sometimes an oxymoron, and more is more, less is not more for them.
Right,
you know, if you're tired, we got to work you harder.
Right.
You know, as opposed to let's back off.
Right.
You know, and it's parent driven, and we're in there going, well, you're just being soft on them. If you're trying to, you know, well, coach, it's their third stress fracture in 2 years.
Right.
We got to do something.
Right.
You know, but you know what? They know about this eating disorder, and they're not having their period. But the coaches don't put together the other things.
Right.
You know,
right.
and it's a hard sell. It really is.
Yeah,
you know, how do you tell a parent, don't play your kid that much? Well, he's got to get a scholarship. Well, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
That's exactly right. And that's all you can hope. I mean, again, that's one of those red flags that we talked about. That's the illness, burnout. They're just not recovering. That the whole idea of they're decreasing in performance, the default for everybody is, well, you're not working hard enough.
Right.
You got to work more. Well, of course, and we've plateaued, so we've got to adjust it and change it. And that is what I would like to tell anybody who watches this or listens to this is that's got to be one of those red flags. The second you have that inclination inside that we've got to do more, we've got to work out harder, after when you look back and say, well, they've been doing this, it used to be fun and it's decreasing, maybe say, okay, wait a second, maybe it's time to relax a little bit. And again, when I say rest, I don't mean, you know, eat potato chips and watch TV.
Which maybe for a day is good.
Right, absolutely, yeah. But not for long periods.
Right.
You're still doing, they just need to decrease that intensity. And you're right, telling that parent that is one of the most difficult conversations you're going to have.
But right.
I think that's part of what we do as athletic trainers that's so critical is we need to have that conversation. That falls on us.
Right.
You know, right. And we need this because a parent's not going to voluntarily go read, oh, this is our athlete, is my son experiencing this? No, they're going to think he's not working hard enough.
I got to get him a different coach or another coach. I know the hardest conversation I would have, let's just take football because this is when it was most prevalent. The hardest conversation I'd have with our coach was I'd tell him his starting quarterback wasn't going to play for a while. That's a whole different conversation.
Exactly, right.
Is he'd be griping during 2 days that we were flat and we were soft and we weren't getting anything done. And you'd have to say, coach, you just complained to me how tired you are, and you're not running around and hitting people.
Why don't we
cut it back today?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Come on. Just try it.
Yeah.
You know, what's the worst thing that happens? We still suck and we're still flat tomorrow.
Right.
Nothing changes.
Right.
But then you can tell me, shut up, it didn't work. Right. But at least let's take them to the pool or tell them, hey, get them out there and make them warm up and then go get out of here. We're done.
Right.
You've upped their spirits.
Absolutely.
You know, that
Absolutely.
It's fun again because, like, you know, we don't do it. And some would do it, some wouldn't.
Yep.
But, it, you know, again, if we can lift the spirits, it's now fun again. Maybe we recharge them some way,
Absolutely.
You know, to get it going. But so I'm a fan of playing multi-sports.
Mm-hmm.
All I ask our coaches was, let's at least, as they come off of one sport into the next, don't just throw them in there in a full practice that first day or into tournaments. Give them about a week or so to rest and just ease into it.
Yep.
And then I don't care what you do. You know, they need a mental break. They need to figure out what y'all are doing, and they can't, you know, go into it. But I'm with Andrews also. You got to have an off season.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. You've got to be doing something.
Right.
But, you know, not 8 hours a day in the off season.
Right.
You know, it's got to be smart there too. And then you've got to build in that time to go on vacation.
Right.
You know, and do those things, because if not,
yep.
you know, you can't work 365. Yeah. How do you expect them to train 365?
Bubba, you said a key phrase in there, and you said mental break. And I think that is one of the keys that we can't get away from. We've got to allow our athletes the mental break. So when we say things like rest, you know, I'm a big fan of multi-sport athletes as well. I think that variety is key.
Right.
But when the multi-sport becomes a dilemma or a problem is when we're not allowing that mental break.
Right.
You know, and the athlete, we have to allow them to just chill out, you know, for a little bit. Now, typically speaking, the research says that needs to be between 14 and 21 days, generally speaking. So that, like you mentioned, you know, about 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, that mental break does way more good. And again, they're not sitting back all day, feet up, you know, eating grapes and the other stuff we imagine, gaining 20 pounds, this kind of thing. No, but just the mental break. They can still actually play the game. Just don't put any stakes on it for them.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that always gets me is, all right, well, we'll give them that time, but I want you to come hit with the team. No problem. But the second the athlete thinks that, well, I know I'm just hitting with the team, hitting around, you know, in the batting cages, but the coach is really watching.
Mm-hmm.
And they're evaluating. The coach goes up with the clipboard and asks them, how many cuts are you getting?
Right.
Are you hitting, you know, this kind of thing. All of a sudden, then the mental break is now over for that
athlete.
Then
forget it. I better go to practice.
The coach says, no, it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Yeah.
The athlete doesn't believe them.
Right.
The coach really honestly has to just hands off and just, you know what, go to the cages on your own and hit and just believe that the athlete's going to do it. That way it's a mental break for the kid, that they're not being evaluated, they're not being measured against someone else. That mental break is fundamental.
So here's one that was asked for me to talk about was, let's take quasi-multisport. The kid that goes, that's in, let's just say, football season, but goes and plays basketball with his buddies on the weekend. That's not a true multi-sport athlete. The risk there is getting hurt and your coach wanting to kill you for not being able to participate. But is there a detriment of overtraining by going and playing with your buddies? And I'm going to say no, because it's a mental break of just having fun.
I'm saying no to that as well. Now, there is a physiologic metabolic tax, but at that age, they can handle that.
Right. They're not overworking themselves,
right,
typically.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd feel like I hit a brick wall the next day.
Right.
You know, but not for the 16-year-old, 12-year-old kid who wants to go play pickup basketball with their buddies. That actually is a stress relief.
It's a benefit, them. Yes.
That's right. So I would agree with you 100%. I'm going to say no, that's not an issue. Now, again, you hit the nail on the head. The coach is going to be upset if he tweaks his ankle.
Right.
For sure.
Right.
That's a different issue entirely.
Well, that's when you tell them, so how'd that work out for you?
You know,
you made
exactly,
that decision,
right,
so
exactly.
What are you going to do? So.
But, you know, going to the river and swimming with their buddies, playing a pickup game here or there, I would actually encourage that type of behavior, because it's a mental break, it's a relief. They're staying physically active,
right,
but the mental stress of I'm being evaluated. Now, the mental stress of competition is you know, because some of these kids are inherently competitive.
Right.
Now, when they play that pickup game, they're going to want to win.
Right.
Too. That's fine. I'm not saying, you know, just go play horse and nobody cares. They still want to win. But it's just the fact that the stress of not being evaluated all the time, of competing for a spot, that's what the cumulative stress.
Right. And let's face it, trash talking your buddies is therapeutic.
Absolutely.
You know?
You're absolutely
So, yeah. God, I had something else I was going to bring up, and I can't remember. It'll come to me later. But yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, even at our age, if we go do something like that and playing around with your friend or your kids, that's fun. There's,
absolutely.
You know, oh, I know what it was. I again, with the multi-sport athlete, I think it's much more important, and we'll take your kid's a football, baseball player.
Yep.
So what position does he play in football?
He plays wide out and defensive back in football, and then center field and third base in baseball.
Okay, so let's put it the he's got to make the catch on fourth down for the first down to continue the drive late in the game.
Yep.
That's a good stress in the grand scheme of things.
Yes.
It's a positive stress. That is good, and then making that, let's say he's got to get a base hit to drive in the winning run in the bottom of the seventh, okay, to end the game.
Right.
That's a good positive stress, too. Now, there's benefits that come out of failing in that, too.
That's
and
right.
In baseball, you fail 7 out of 10
right.
times, and you're a stud.
Right.
You know? But those are good stresses. And good things. I'd rather have that than the, well, can you lift 5 more pounds or jump
right.
over a dummy one more time?
I agree.
That's not a stress that matters.
Right.
You know, I want my offensive lineman to throw the shot in track because
right.
that stress of throwing it whatever amount of feet he needs to qualify or
right.
to win district and not scratch correlates to not jumping offside on
yeah.
fourth and goal.
Right.
You know, versus, well, he lifted that bench press
right.
one more rep.
Right.
Big
exactly.
deal.
Right.
You know. And
yeah,
so,
and I think that's a lot of misplacing a lot of coaches. So that stress that the athlete doesn't need that adds to that
right.
cumulative effect. You know, I know several coaches who will have a certain fitness requirement for an athlete to even be eligible to try out,
mm-hmm.
for example. And okay, I understand you're trying to weed out kids, but you're cutting out a lot of great athletes
right.
doing that because, well, you've got to do at least 100 pull-ups in, you know, you get 5 minutes or whatever, you know. You got to, which
is
insane.
I can do one pull-up in 100 minutes.
I know.
You know, so.
So,
yeah.
You know, the record and who can do the most pull-ups in a certain, in 1 minute, you
yeah.
know. So instead of focusing on, like, the good stresses that you're mentioning about, my son is at home, you know, after all of this, hey, the record is 44 pull-ups in 1 minute. I'm trying to get 46.
Right.
So he's spending now 2 hours a night working on pull-ups.
Right. He can never recover.
Which he'll never recover.
Yeah.
That's his, before his nighttime bed ritual. I mean, we're in the hotel last night, South Padre Island. He's got to get in 100 sit-ups. He's got to get in. He's trying to do 100 push-ups. I mean, 500 sit-ups, 100 push-ups before bedtime because he knows he's going back for fitness tryouts, which is a tryout for the tryout.
Yeah, that's crazy.
For baseball. It's like, son, we're on vacation.
Right.
You know, we're going to the beach tomorrow.
Look that up off your phone. That was what the definition
yeah, exactly,
of vacation
right,
is.
Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. And those are the kinds of stress. He doesn't need that stress right,
right.
now.
You right.
know? And but you're right. The third down, fourth down scenario, we got to convert. That's critical.
Yeah.
That's what they need. Those, at any rate.
Yeah.
I'm a soapboxing you with you again.
That's all right. That's all right. Anything that we haven't talked about that you want to add before we end this one?
Well, just the fact that I think one of the things with overtraining syndrome in particular, and we've already mentioned it, but I really would like to reiterate it, and that's the fact that it's typically not the physiologic metabolic stress that puts an athlete in overtraining syndrome. It's the it's the non-sport stresses.
It's the helicopters.
Yeah, it's the other stuff that we really haven't talked about much. The exams, the getting teased in the locker room. There's getting teased and there's getting bullied.
Right.
You know,
right.
that kind of thing. I have no problem with the teasing that goes on in the locker rooms and stuff like that. I think that's healthy too.
Yes.
But then there's the bullying and the intimidation, especially when you're competing. You know, there's the parents and those kinds of stresses, the driver's ed class, the
mm-hmm.
the fact that they've got to maintain a certain GPA to stay eligible.
Right.
Those are stresses on kids that we typically forget. And it's mom and dad might be having a rough spot at home, you know, those kinds of things.
And you
those,
throw all that in one pot. That's
you
not
throw
yeah.
all that in. And it's now the research is very clear. The switch that flips from non-functional overreaching to overtraining syndrome is always tied to the non-sport stresses.
Mm-hmm.
And we as athletic trainers, parents, and coaches we teach our kids to live in this isolated bubble. Well, you're in a zone. Take this. Don't think about that. Focus on this. We say that, but we can't do that.
And I think when I was growing up, you know, a lot of this didn't exist.
Yeah.
But when I was growing up, I think that tightrope, so to speak, in my area was – we were walking down the middle of the road. We weren't walking a razor thin wire
right.
between, you know, good over here and overtraining over here
right.
like we are today. There
right.
was a definite delineation.
Yeah.
It's football season. It's basketball season. It's track
right.
and baseball.
Right.
That's what you do. There was the lines weren't blurred.
Right. And there was a lot of mental recovery. When you and I were playing, there wasn't the back-to-back overlapping. Right. I mean, there wasn't opportunities for me to play baseball all year round because the league just doesn't exist 30 years ago.
Right, exactly.
You know, now they do. So we did. You're right. We had that mental break we were talking about a minute ago. We allow ourselves to recover. I remember having 2 weeks off before I was required to report to basketball practice after football.
Right, and you weren't going over the holidays all the time.
That's right.
Oh, well, you're not playing for your school. Well, let's go here and do this.
Exactly. No. What? You know, and getting picked, or somebody realizes they're off that week, they're not a game, and having other teams. I mean, this is the other thing that happens is other teams are putting together tournament teams.
Right.
Oh, your team's not playing in the tournament? Can I have those two players
from
your team, you know, and put them over, and all of a sudden, so that you don't want them to have a week off. I mean, they'll lose something. No, that's actually what they need, and that didn't exist when you and I played.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. No, it's, oh, you're off? Okay. Just be ready when we go.
Exactly.
That was it. You know, we start this time, be ready to go.
I mean, what our coaches did for me, and this is 30 years ago, we got a piece of paper at the end of the summer saying, this is what I'd like you to be able to do when you come back.
Right.
You know, this
here's the weight room hours.
Exactly. You know, we did this on our own. That doesn't happen anymore.
No.
Now it's all supervised, and it's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's got everything we need to do. I'm not nearly as professional at this as Jeremy is on signing off, but this is Bubba, and we're down in Padre at Spats. Hope y'all keep listening.